US. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Obviously, we'll talk about the defense of this killer, but the idea of defamation of character on a national scale with this ABC's Brian Ross, who I'm calling for his firing immediately, but what does Robin have a point?
To do that, Steve.
What's that?
I'd expect you to do that.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, it's just wrong. But further than that, is there anything illegal or defamation of character for the James Holmes who was connected with the Tea Party?
Oh, I think for him to come in and claim any defamation of character would be absolutely ridiculous here.
Really?
Given where his character is. I mean, his character is a mass murderer, and speculation about what he might belong to, there's a lot of freedom. There's freedom of press, and then there's a lot of discussion. I don't think that would go very far at all, Steve. But
okay.
But someone else's name is the same name, if he can prove that people had connected him to it and that it had been done in a way that was slanderous or libelous.
What could be more slanderous and harmful, counselor, than connecting your name with the Tea Party? Now everybody... Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I think that might be a claim that they could make, Steve. I don't know how much there would be involved in it. I mean, I'm always hesitant to say, well, yes, this is a claim and there's lots of money attached to it.
Okay.
Because you do have to prove damages. You have to prove that it affected you. There are some sort of, in some cases, the damages are presumed, but still a jury has to find what the amount is.
All right. Well, in a sense, and here 3 days after this event, this is almost... Well, it's almost silly to be talking about. Frankly, this journalist, who's not a journalist at all, if he's willing to do that, he has absolutely no professional credentials to speak of. And I know Brian Ross has done a lot of great stuff on the national level, but to do something this small time is unbelievable, and he should be fired. But that aside, let's move on. Now, this guy is, quote, lawyered up and is not cooperating, this killer. So, not a surprise to you, or what?
I would be surprised if he was talking, but we don't know anything about this kid. Evidently, he's very, very smart. He was in a graduate program in neuroscience at the University of Colorado. You have to be very smart to get into those programs. Probably he's not legally insane because he's probably too smart to be legally insane.
Hmm.
He may be schizophrenic. He may have some other problems. The question is going to first come up whether he's legally, whether he knows what's happening around him, because you have to know that in order to constitutionally bring charges against somebody, to be aware of what the charges are. Probably he is.
So, stop there for a moment. What's the distinction, Mike Sawaya, who is an attorney we're talking to right now, what's the distinction between insanity and having an illness that makes you act insane?
Well, you have to know the difference between right and wrong. And my guess is that he's probably not legally insane. That would be my guess. I would find that hard to believe, but, you know, I would have to talk to psychiatrists and see what they can get into. I'm sure the psychiatrists are going to have a heyday with this guy.
Yeah.
Because this guy obviously has some very, very deranged ways of thinking. But does he know right and wrong? Can he tell what's going on around him? Probably he does, and so therefore there will be a trial, and it will go through the normal trial procedures.
Could you ever defend a guy like this?
I absolutely wouldn't want to know this guy, to be frank about it. I'm so sorry. I'm a lawyer, and I should be willing to defend anyone. But I could probably get famous if I did it. Most people who do those trials do get more famous. But I think this is just so evil, Steve, that what has happened here is just so low and so bad. I have some questions about how the theater ever let this kid in. How does somebody get in a theater with four guns and 6,000 rounds of ammunition?
Well, this is interesting. Listen to this one gentleman's recount of this. His name is Corbin Dayton. And this talk now of maybe having an accomplice or so forth, or the fact that he came in through the back exit, or did he buy a ticket and then go out?
He bought a ticket. He went in. He sat down on the front row. He waited for the movie to start. He got up and went out the back door of the theater where his car, and went and got his car, pulled his car back around. And when he left that time to go get his car, he propped the door open.
Well, here's Corbin Dayton. Listen to this and see what you make of it.
to the very front row of us, to the very corner, to the very right. And it seemed like he got a phone call, and he went and took his phone call towards the emergency exit. Most people take their phone call towards the lobby. So it seemed like he was holding his door open with his foot, and when I looked at what he was doing, his gestures was looking like he was trying to find somebody or trying to signal somebody to come this way. And then my friend came. I went to bring her into the theater. The door was closed. And about 15 to 20 minutes into the movie, the door swings back open. A guy walks in dressed all in black, helmet, gas mask, black armor, suit,
okay,
everything.
Let's bring that down, Sonny. That's Corbin Dayton. He was in the theater, of course, theater number 9. So whether there was an accomplice or that was this guy, this killer, acting like he was taking a cell phone call and had to go throughout the exit and so forth. And Murph, I'll have more on this specifically in just a few moments. What do you take from all of this here as far as you brought it up, Mike Zawaya, the ownership of the theater's responsibility in all this?
Well, Steve, this isn't the first time that things like this have done in malls or theaters. One just happened up in Toronto not very far in the past, and one of the women that died in the theater had actually been involved in that mall shooting.
Right,
So it's not a surprise that there are people out there that will do harm, kidnap children, or do whatever they can. You expect a theater to be safe. You don't expect a door in the back can be propped open, or they can leave and come back through that same door with guns. I mean, I'm amazed. I'm appalled, frankly. And I think this may be one of the bigger legal questions for lawyers that will take some lawyering time, is to figure out how the liability of this theater, because there are more than 50 people now that have been affected, some of them dead, many families. I mean, this is the part that really makes me kind of upset, Steve, to think that we all are out in the public where in public places there's such little regard for elementary security.
Well, I feel
there's been something on this door that let people know someone had gone out a back door.
I see.
I mean, an alarm
of sorts that... Yeah, you would expect alarms to go off if there's a legitimate fire or an emergency and you're going out that door. But if you can go out and exit or prop it open in some way and not to be notified, yes, it is an interesting question, isn't it?
I think it's a big question. Yeah. And there'll be lots of interesting questions come up about this case as it goes along and what happens with his defendant and what his pleas are and what his state of mind is. I think it'll be a fascinating case to deal with. Right now, we know that he's going in for his first arraignment today, first advisement, and the first advisement, the court will probably deny his bail because bail is usually not given in capital cases like this where it's evident that a crime was committed.
Mike, we've got to run here in 60 seconds. What is your prediction on what will happen? And this could be, I mean, a decade before this guy sees quote-unquote justice.
Well, it'll be a circus. It'll be the circus that we've seen over and over in the media. This man will be tried in a